The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Welcome to a special episode of the podcast, a family episode, the third family episode of Unpublished, because we've had Amy's mum, we've had Amy's dad, and now we have Amy's little sister on the podcast.
My little tiny weenie baby sister.
Rude.
But everyone thinks she's older than me because she's much more mature.
She is. She's much more mature. And we only have two mics between three, so please excuse us if the sound is a little bit iffy. The reason we wanted to get Kirsty on today is because Kirsty, like Amy, is also an entrepreneur and small business owner. Although Kirsty's business is actually a lot bigger and more complex than ours. Kirsty, would you mind telling us a little bit about your business before we start the podcast?
I would love to. It's very different to what Amy does in that it's very systematic and organized. But not that you're not organized.
I'm not organized.
So we are based in Sydney and we are an end-to-end premium transition service. So
that's, which could mean anything.
That sounds so funny.
Are you a hitman? It sounds like you could be a hitman.
We've worked so long with trying to find our one-liner because what we do is so broad, it's really hard to put it into one word. So we basically help people move house is a much easier way of saying it.
But you do it from literally the
end to end.
Even like you help them declutter.
Yeah, so we help them get on the market, get ready to sell their house. So we declutter them, organize them, style them, help them sell all their stuff. And then once they've sold, we help them move house and get settled in their next house.
And how old were you when you started this business?
21. And then we incorporated and came a company at 23.
She was just a little baby.
I mean, it amazes me that both of you from pretty early on were like, I'm not working for someone else.
Yeah.
And what do you think that is in the both of you?
Which I find funny because, like, our parents are very, like, mum's a teacher by trade and dad's an accountant. Like, they don't get more, I don't know, run of the mill than that.
But they are, like, different. And, like, dad and mum have always had, like, these strange projects. Like, they're both, like, highly creative. They've worked for themselves a lot. They took time off to get further educated. Like, I don't know. Like, they've had these really regular jobs, but I feel like their spirit is very entrepreneurial. Would you agree?
I would, Amy. I would agree. So I'm not, it's not like I felt like I bucked up against the system and I didn't enjoy working for people. I feel like I stumbled into it by accident and it just made sense.
Yeah, because you were working.
I was working in real estate and really loved real estate and loved working in people's houses. And like, you know, as Amy said, like our parents I really think put that in us. Like we renovated so many homes and we moved so much that I think that's always been in me. But there was just a side of real estate I just really didn't enjoy.
What was it?
Just like the stereotypical real estate agent and the sales shenanigans, and it was just nasty. And I was like, this is not who I am. But then my time in real estate taught me a lot, and there was a massive gap, which is where Made Home basically came from.
And you were really excited about that gap, I feel like, when you saw it. Like, you were like, why is no one doing this?
It just made sense. It was so stupid.
I mean, moving house is literally the worst thing ever. It's like the worst. I cannot. As you said, we've moved so many times. Mom and dad were very adventurous. Like, they loved to move countries, move houses, and it was a lot. And yeah, you just solved a problem.
Yeah, like when I talk about what we do, people go, I can't believe that exists, or oh, I wish I'd known about you last month, or oh, my friend moved last week. Like, I think it's very needed, and a lot of people just don't know. Well, it doesn't really exist a lot. It's pretty niche.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about how you started in that first few years? Like, how did you get it off the ground from zero? Literally, from you had this idea, you had no idea how to make a business, I'm guessing, and then suddenly, yeah. Now, what, 8 years later, you have 15 employees and you work, you know, it's a whole operation.
It's
a whole operation.
It's an operation.
Yeah.
It gets done. It's definitely changed shape a lot in that time. So I sort of started as a sole trader with another family member, actually, and she did one side of the business and I did another side of the business, and that didn't continue to work that way. And that was a really interesting time. But actually, like, in hindsight, like, I look at it all and so much was learned and it was only good things came from it. And then I became a company so that I could start employing other people to help, because I think it was a lot more. I was a project manager hiring other people to do and other businesses to do a lot of the work. And then I was like, I want to do this in-house and I want control over it and do things our way. And so then I started building team, and then it's just, it's the word is only organic. Like, I've never planned. Yeah. And it's always just happened. Which, like, I'm a planner. And so I remember there was definitely a period around that time where I was like, no, I need to stop everything. I need to go and get a degree, or I need to do a course, because I just wanted the knowledge, because I was really uncomfortable sitting in that place of not knowing what to do next or how to do very simple things. And then I just taught myself a lot and leaned on other people to teach me a lot. And now I look back at those things and they're so simple. And I find myself teaching other people who are in that place now. And that's really nice.
And to be clear, like, you never did a business degree or anything. And it's, which is, I think, really cool, because a lot of people who we get talking to us are like, well, do I have to do a fine arts degree if I want to be an artist or something? Or if I want to start a business, do I have to do a business degree? And you're starting a much more practical business than we are trying to start. And you didn't do those things.
Yeah. And I think that's, I could teach the practical side of what we do, like, with my eyes closed. That side was so easy. It was definitely like the business side of the accounts and the insurances and paying other people and just so much of the admin that goes with running a business that I felt so clueless about, that's still really important. And I still find that juggle really hard of needing to be in that space. And I guess that's my job now, of understanding all of that side of things while still doing the day-to-day running, which is what I love.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you think you could have learned any of this other than just by doing it?
Oh, yeah. I think, like, well, I don't know. I don't think it really exists. Like,
there's no course for it.
There's no short. And I remember I got so mad because I don't know where I, what website or platform I was on, but I was inquiring about, like, is there like a 5-day short course that's like a smash business? This is all you need to know. And I remember the guy being like, no, if you're running a business off a 5-day course, like, you shouldn't be running a business.
Oh my God.
But then you got to start somewhere.
And I was like, and that's what I think made me go, oh, okay, so I need to do the full degree. And then I did nothing and I just did it anyway.
Fuck yeah. That's so fucking annoying. I think there's always these like gatekeeping, like people who are like, oh, you need to do this in order to learn. You need to do that in order to be able to do this. And it's bullshit. Like you can just learn. I think business is learnt on the job. And I think people think that they have to qualify or do something before they can be in business. But the only thing that qualifies you is doing the business.
And this is what actually I was going to say was it a weird moment when you had your first employee? Because it's like, no one's giving you permission to have an employee, right? It's just you go out there and you say there's a job offer and suddenly someone's working for you.
Well, I think it's definitely, again, like because it was so slow and organic, it didn't feel like that at the start. Like it was just like I was working with some of my friends and like I was employing mutual people that I knew and I was on the ground working with them. So it was just kind of like we're doing it together and it's fun. So I think that moment hit when we had like a staff retreat thing last year. And I had a mat leave before that, so I was stepped back from the business quite a bit. And so some of these were women I didn't really know. And then we were all together and I was like, you're all here because of this thing that I made. And it was like this was one of those like veil lifted off your eyes, like, whoa, when did we get here? Like it was very shocking. Wonderful. But it was just like, oh no, all these people are in the room. All these women are in the room because of something I made.
That's really cool. I'm really sorry, guys, but I need to like violently cough.
Go for it, Amo. Go for it. Oh, that was a good cough, wasn't it? Just providing commentary on Amy's.
So sorry, I don't know what happened. No, I'm okay.
Quality stuff. Quality stuff.
It's so interesting and so beautiful, and I've loved. Obviously, it's like been amazing watching you like step into this position of like leadership of all these people, especially because you're so young. Like, is it weird being so much younger than most of the people you employ?
Yeah, there was definitely a period where most of them were like within a sort of 10-year. Age range of me, and so it felt fine. And then I now have probably 5 of my team are like probably 20 to 30 years older than me, and that's, I don't know, at first I was like, oh, weird, but more weird, I was worried about the culture of the team shifting rather than me feeling weird about leading them. But no, it doesn't bother me. I'm the boss.
You are. I love that. You are the boss. You made it. These are people that you're employing to support you in your endeavors.
Part of the purpose of this podcast for me is to show people who are creatives that we actually have it quite easy in business. So I wanted you to talk to us a little bit about, like, because watching you having to do work while you're over here visiting us and how complex it is and just how much more cash flow you need than us and how much bigger the operation is and how, you know, for us, it's so great because, and once again, I don't want you to feel bad about yourself, Kirsty, but, you know, we put up a course and it's 90% profitable or something.
Yeah.
But you're like, literally, maybe, you're looking for a few percent here and there, right? And is that, very stressful for you?
Yeah, I think that used to be, like, I feel like I used to resonate more with the creative where I would go hire out my services and I would get paid for my services and it was like all the money coming back to me. And it's been interesting watching that shift into, okay, now it's wages and I'm paying staff to do that. And now it's paying for our warehouse and it's paying for our vans and it's paying, like, there's just so many things now that need to happen to run the business. And I think I don't know how to describe it, but like the amount of money running through the business was just at a lower level and that was stressful. And now it's at a higher level and it's still stressful. But like, I think in 5 years' time, it'll just be like, let's add a zero and that's the norm, but it'll still be stressful. Yeah. But like, I'm operating so much higher. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, we're just moving up tiers as you grow and get used to it. And so if I had looked at, you know, the amount of money that moves in and out of our account, if I'd looked at that 5 years ago, I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's so much cash. That's so stressful. How do you do it? Whereas now it's pretty normal. Like, like there'll be days where it's just like 20K in, 20K out, 50 in, 50 out. And it's just like,
okay.
Yep.
Is it painful to not be able to just yoink and take that for yourself? Like when you see it, you're like, oh my gosh. Because there are weeks when you get nothing, right? And
yeah.
You know, maybe what months when you get nothing and months where you're paying your, you know, lowest hour casual employee more than you pay yourself.
Yes.
And that must be incredibly frustrating sometimes.
There was definitely like a period where we just didn't pay us. And like even today, I did pay rent today and I asked my husband, hey, Chris, what's the minimum I can pay us this week? because cash was tight this week. And it was, I think it's knowing that the cash will come eventually. But yeah, I guess it is funny. Like this amount of money has never run through our personal accounts, but we are working with quite a lot of cash. But it doesn't feel like that much cash. But is it?
You just have no ability to reflect on where you've come from. This is something that I think would be interesting to talk about. Like Kirsty has zero ability to take stock and to look at what you've done. And especially with how old you are, you're now a mum and you're pregnant again, like, I feel like this happens with a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of creatives. It's like you just keep running with whatever is happening. And it's like there's this amount of money now, so I just get used to it straight away. And your goalposts move really quickly. And it means that you have no moment of celebration. Yeah. And I think it's a problem.
No, yeah. And it's interesting, like, spending time with you and, like, just, you know, people who are in your corner and you hear them. I don't know. I guess it's like a fake humility. In that, like, they go, oh no, it's what you're doing is amazing. And it's like, oh no. But it's not like I'm not shirking it. I just, yeah, I'm very forward thinking. Like, I think my number two on, like, that, it's one of those strengths tests is futuristic. Like,
yeah.
I'm always forward thinking about how far we've got to go and where I want to be with the business and what I've got to do to get there. That I rarely look backwards. And I do have those little moments, like that staff retreat last year. That was one of those moments where I went, oh my gosh. And it feels like it snuck up on me because I don't reflect backwards often. It was like, oh, when did we get here? It was like I was asleep and then I woke up a little bit. So I don't know how to be better at that.
When I look at both of you, what I see though is something really interesting, which is even in the hard times, you both have this kind of core belief that you're still going to get through it. Like, because I see you both struggle often with, you know, is this just too hard? Like, I have to pay my VAT, my GST, I have to pay my taxes now and I haven't saved up enough for it and stuff. And it's just, is it even worth it to be an entrepreneur? Maybe I should just quit and do a day job. But then I see you both find something within yourself to keep going. What do you think that is?
I don't know. What do you think? I know. I see it in both of us too. Do you see it in yourself?
Yeah. Like, we'll have our little whine to each other where we say business is trash.
Yeah.
And there are days I desperately want my 9 to 5 and my paycheck and I come home. But then, yeah, I never doubt that it's going to work.
This is the delusion I speak of. This is the belief that you're the exception that I think all creatives, all business owners need. You have to believe that you are the exception to all the rules and that you are absolutely going to make it. And I think, ironically, that core belief is why you make it. Like, if you didn't have it, then you doubt yourself. You don't take the action you need to take. It's a concept I think about all the time at the moment. It's like I have this, like, inner knowing that this is absolutely what I'm meant to be doing and absolutely it will succeed. And even in, like, those days where it's like, fuck, like, it doesn't, like, I will grieve because I'm a highly emotional person, but I will always eventually just get back up. And I think I see that. We're both quite stubborn maybe or something.
Well, like, I just think, like, there's no other option. Like, this is this is it, this is what I'm doing. And I don't think it comes from a place of fear of failure, because I think that's quite a negative outlook, and it would feed into what we do in a negative way. Whereas it's kind of just a, yep, well, we keep going because that's just what we're going to do. And obviously, like, I don't want to fail, but I don't know how to word it.
I agree. I'm not keeping on going because I refuse to fail. Yeah. I keep on going because this isn't going to fail.
That's something interesting I was just thinking about, which is that, Kirsty, you have to deal with a lot of expenses and a lot of costs. And I know a lot of creatives are really scared to take the plunge. They're really scared to trust that if they put $1,000 into the business that they will get it back. And they're like, well, I'm just losing that $1,000, aren't I? How do you deal with having to do big expenses? Like, because you have to deal with $50,000 or $100,000 expenses sometimes. So
yeah.
How do you deal with that? Like, how do you not get so afraid of that?
Ebbs and flow. I think I've shifted my perspective on that. There needing to be money in the account, in that, like, I drained the account today to do payroll, but I haven't sent my invoices for the last few weeks. And so all of a sudden I'll send 50 grand worth of invoices and then it comes back up again. And I think it's allowing the ebbs and flows to be okay and getting comfortable in them and going, it doesn't have to be green every month and there'll be a red, but then there could be a massive green the following month. And it's an uncomfortable place to be, but I think that's business. I think Dad taught us that, of like, it just goes up and down. Like, yeah. His family business was in steel, and he was at that point of, there's the extra two zeros on the numbers I'm doing. But it was like million in, million out, 10 million in, 10 million out, because they were working with such high volumes of stock. And I think you just adapt to going, that's how business goes, and that's okay. And it's not always about having money in the bank.
I don't know. I love that answer. I think it's trust.
Yeah.
You have to trust that it will come back at you eventually. And that's incredibly hard, especially if you haven't been brought up with these narratives of, like, you know, trust the ebbs and flows, or if you've come from a scarcity space where it's like, fuck, if I give this, maybe this is the end. Like, it can be incredibly challenging to overcome that narrative, but it does ebb and flow. Like, and learning to ride those waves is such a huge part of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. And I think, like, it's, you know, we talk about our businesses as like our babies.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one else is going to do it. Like, I've got, if it's a bad month, I've just got to, like, push harder and figure out how to make more money next month. Like, it's on me, like, the onus is on me to make it work and to make it happen. And it's like, we feel the same way with how we parent. Like, no one else is going to do it. So when it's really shit, you've got to get up in the night and you've got to do it because no one else is going to do it. And so I think it's just, it's hard work, but there's the victory in it of, yeah, satisfaction of knowing you pulled through and you got through that winter and you're back in a flow.
I mean, you have skin in the game, which I think is something that a lot of artists struggle with, is that we don't take the plunge, so then we don't have any skin in the game. It's like, you do have to do these things because there are 15 people relying on you for their livelihood. So it's like, you also have to do that. And a lot of artists, I think, go, well, I'm just never going to even start because then no one will rely on me. I'll never have taken the plunge. I'll never have had to go through those hard periods, those scary periods, I think. What do you think, Amo?
Yeah, I have something to say here. I think this idea of having skin in the game is incredibly important. Invest. And I think investing money, you know, is incredibly scary, but it puts you in the game. And artists and creatives and entrepreneurs are trying to skirt the game by doing as little risk as possible. And I'm not against, like, risk minimization, and everyone has their own risk tolerances. But when you actually give something and you say, no, I commit to this, and there's an action that follows that, whether you are investing financially or you're, you know, signing up to something, that's when there's skin in the game and now you have to fight and you're taking yourself seriously. And I think there's something about that that's really, really powerful. And it's why often we have our, you know, financial policies with all of our courses and stuff, but we take it really seriously and we have our policies that if you choose to, you know, enroll in one of our courses for free, we are asking you to take this incredibly seriously, because without financial buy-in, oftentimes we don't buy in emotionally.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's really interesting. I find that, Kirsty, your perspective on all this is so interesting to me because it's so foreign to us. It's so, to me hearing about it, I'm scared thinking about the amount of money in and out that has to go through your business and how we balk at these small, you know, few thousand dollar expenses. And how coddled we are as well. It's like, I think, but that is, once again, to come back to this, the amazing thing about being an artist is that, you know, you do really only have to put in, like, Amy and I are, if you looked at compared our zeros, which is our accounting software, like, just such different businesses that it's crazy. Like, it's almost not even this, it's almost, you need a different word for it than business in a way. And I just want to say to artists that when you listen to Kirsty, like, you don't have to be...
You don't need a team of 20 people.
No, you don't need... But amazing. I mean, if you somehow did as an artist, interesting. Super interesting.
I mean, yeah, I'm intrigued. I want to know what you're doing. But you certainly don't need to start with a team of 20. Nor did you either.
Yeah, and Kirsty started with... Kirsty. Herself, by herself. And then you had a few years. Like, so how many years was it between you starting just doing this by yourself and you getting your first employee?
We incorporated in 2018, and I think I employed 3 that year, and then 29, I should know these numbers. We probably doubled year on year, so it was probably 3 and then 6 and then 12, and yeah, now we sit at about 15.
Hmm.
Yeah, so not double each year, but yes.
So that's the thing, is like, you can start out smaller. You don't have to take a huge leap initially as well. Like, you didn't risk everything in the first year. It's like, you built up slowly, you built your reputation, like, you built your systems, you built your ability to teach other people how to do your work, because that's a huge thing. Like, the main moat that you have in your business is that you know your systems, right?
Yeah, and I think because we're such a premium service, like, the quality was and still is something that I'm very particular about, in that, like, there are other people that do what we do, but not to the level that we do it. And so if anything, it's like always teaching people how to do what we do very well, and also how to love people really well, because that's, you know, where people oriented rather than being task oriented.
Yeah, we had that whole brainstorming session yesterday about how we could sort of like delight your customers and how we could get them it was that feedback session that we were talking about as well. It's like, how can we, you know, people who love you, and how can we convert that love of you into more business for you? Which I think is interesting, because you focus so much on people loving you, but you haven't focused on that next step a little bit.
Capturing the love.
Yeah, capturing the love and, like, getting it to help your business.
Yeah, I think that's a funny one. And it's the classic, I'm sure, of, like, the business owner, of, like, the thousands of things that are on the list that you want to do, but we just spread ourselves so thin that they don't get done. Like, we're not doing a feedback form currently or capturing any reviews from clients, and it's just that thing that's fallen through because I'm too busy trying to do too many other things.
I've just started Cal Newport's Slow Productivity, and I've probably bitched about Cal Newport in the past. As we all know, I have a 50-50 love-hate relationship with Cal. James prefers him.
80-20.
We can have another conversation about this later, but at the very beginning of this book, he talks about how I actually think you should read it. The concept of productivity for entrepreneurs has been translated into looking busy and, like, doing busy work, rather than, like, what we did yesterday was we spent, like, several hours just ideating and thinking and, like, planning, which doesn't necessarily look busy. I mean, we went on a walk, we just sat and did puzzles, like, but we were talking and conversing this whole time. And I think entrepreneurs, especially, like, I see this in myself all the time, like, founders, artists, we spend a lot of time trying to look busy by doing these smaller, like, tasks that seem very, like, tick-offable. So it's like, oh, emails are a great way to look pseudo productive, and I'm just looking at my board, like, there's, like, small things, bookkeeper, you know, pay Sean, pay Mile. It's like, these things are so small, but they often get done first. Whereas we've got these big ideas that we really should be putting our attention towards, which I feel like is where you're shifting at the moment. It's like, you need to be putting aside these small things that look like you're really productive and feel quite good, and to doing these more macro things, which don't look as productive.
Yeah, 100%. I am a whore for a to-do list. I love it. If I have a really big to-do list and at the end of the day I've, like, ticked it all off, like, I'm like, oh, yes, please. But I'm really sorry. I'm just going to jump in. But it's like, I have the mic control. It's like, how, when I'm like, okay, think about this part of the business, it's like, how do you tick that off?
Yeah, I really struggle in that space because it's not satisfying, because it's not get it done by the end of 12 p.m. Like, I don't like living there, but I'm actually seeing that that's what my job, I'm rewriting my job description as the business grows, and it's not to do invoices, it's not to do payroll. And so it's shifting out of those very little easy tick-offable tasks and into spending time dreaming, getting vision, ideating about where do I want this business to be in 5 years, and I am uncomfortable there.
But it's normal, right, when you're starting out for the first few years to not have the space for that sort of thing. And even though it's important, it's you do have to kind of like, I think, go through a period where of just getting things off the ground where you might not have as much space for that.
Yeah.
That's okay too, right?
And like, I've worn so many hats for so long. I think it's, again, it's classic me not looking backwards, but I forget that I've slogged through that period of like doing all the books, doing all the marketing, doing all the HR, doing all the socials while still going on the ground and bringing in all the work. Whereas now I'm in a bit of a funny place where there are people to do all those jobs. And so I'm a bit lost in that I'm going, what is my role in this business? And so it's rewriting that job description.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think for me, this is another shift that needs to happen as well. Again, like I can get very overwhelmed. I don't know if you can really tell from this podcast, but me and Kirsty are incredibly different. And Kirsty's love of like this like to-do list, like ticking off, there's a lot of organization there. And it's funny, I feel like you're drawn to that because it satisfies you. Whereas my energy is taken up by that because it stresses me out to such a huge extent. And all I can do is think about those things and like how I should be doing them and I'm not doing them. And it's like, we both need to take a step back and realize that that's not our job as entrepreneurs, and not anymore anyway.
I mean, that's why I'm interested in the fact that you're both entrepreneurs, because you are almost opposite personalities in many ways. You have a lot of similarities. Obviously, you look like sisters. You do the same funny voice sometimes, which you're doing right now during the podcast, which people might have noticed.
Am I actually?
Yeah, you guys have a family voice. Whenever I say this, you guys are shocked by it, but you put on a different voice.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It is. Like, you go like this son kind of American. I think it's because you're all talking quotes.
American. Yeah, we often get confused for being American because we were brought up watching so many movies and listening to so many quotes that we just have an American twang.
Mm.
We're just one of those families that does a lot of movie quotes, like a lot. Like, it's like 25% of how we communicate.
I want to go back to your parents for a second here, because I do wonder how much of it was like your parents literally did... You're talking about their renovations and stuff. Like, they were doing it all themselves as well, because they didn't have heaps of money to do it. So it was like they were doing the paint themselves. They were doing construction themselves. They were really hands on with all that sort of stuff. And I wonder if that, and you could have saw them almost taking permission. Like, they weren't builders.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is, you know, your dad quit his corporate job to work for a charity for 10 years as well. You know, they were always doing weird things that weren't expected. They moved to England when everyone was like, why are you moving to England with a young family? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they're always, I love it. Like, I'm so grateful for that in my mum and dad, in our mum and dad. My mum and dad. They have always demonstrated just like going with intuition and playfulness and like, oh, we really want to do that. Could that be possible? Yeah, let's make it happen. And they just make stuff happen however the fuck they do.
Yeah, the big adventure, like, yeah, which I love that we've lived in different, like, we've lived in two countries, and now Amy and James are back here, and it's just go and do. But I think especially something that they instilled in us is no dream was ever squashed. Like, I remember there was a period I really wanted a horse, and like, in hindsight, looking at that, that was not going to happen. But Dad and I like dreamed about converting the garage, and I got books and I read about it, and like, I'm pretty sure, and I'll have to confirm with him, he knew we were not getting a horse. But for a good 6 months, like, I invested so much. And it's not like he led me on. It's just he never crushed a dream.
I reckon he was genuinely thinking about it. No, and I really believe that. Like, they have this, like, it's a delusion again. They have this, like, incredible spirit of, well, maybe we could make that happen.
How can we make it happen?
And, like, another example very similar to that is, like, mum and me getting up at, like, 5 a.m. to go into London to go audition for Luna Lovegood, you know? And we sat in that queue for, like, 12 hours, and my mum was like, yes, you have this. You've got this. Like, they have this, like, undeniable and bizarre belief in whatever it is we want that we can get. And that is so valuable, and I think it's no wonder that we are doing what we are doing, because we had these parents who were like, yes, I think that could happen.
Yeah, so even though you have very different core personalities, I think that your parents fostered this environment of where it's safe to take risks, and yes, it was so loving to you and so supportive of you whenever you took a risk that it was like, yeah, of course, like, just go do that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
and I think that's so, like, that's very rare. But I remember, because I started uni and I was like, this is not my thing. And so they're like, cool, what are you going to do? Like, and it wasn't this, no, you must finish your degree because that's what you must do. It's, right, let's look at the plan. Like, what do you, like, let's look at, like, it was just, it was never a negative. It was, okay, cool, what's next for you? And then I went into real estate, and here we are. Like, I don't even know what, if I had been forced to stay at uni, I'd be on a completely different trajectory.
Yeah, completely. Like, I love it. I feel really grateful in this moment for mom and dad, who will guaranteed be listening, big unpublished fans. Yeah. So,
and also,
shout
you know,
out.
When Amy, when you finished uni and you were floating around, like, you really spent 5 years just not knowing what you're going to do with your life. And I know they were worried about you, but they were never like, come on, Amy, time to buckle down.
They never pushed me. Ever. They, you know, they were living in England and we were in Australia through those really hard years, and they would fly me over when I got really bad. They flew me over like 3 times, I think, when I got bad, and just took care of me. That was all they ever did. You know, they never were like, okay, what's next? They always supported my writing. Like, they never pushed me. Like, and it was a long time. Like, I don't know if I could have done that with my own child, if like on year 5 or 6, when she's still trying to write a fucking book, waitressing, asking for money because she can't pay the rent. Like, they just gave me money when I couldn't pay rent. They were like, yeah, we'll support you. They weren't like, Amy, what are you doing? They never asked. They never said that to me. I'm sure they thought it. I'm really grateful.
I'm sure it probably fucking annoyed them as well.
I know. I was just like a little cash hole for them for a minute there. But so fucking grateful, because again, look at where I am now. And it is because of their, not just financial generosity there, but also because they were just like, yeah, no, I believe that. I believe in you. I believe in your writing. Mm. It's incredible.
Yeah. I think they, both of them have the ability to see, what's the word? Like, see something in someone. Potential. They saw potential in all of us and in our brother as well. Yeah. And they had more belief in us than we did. And they were patient and they called it out of us all.
So patient with us. Yeah, it's so true. I feel so grateful for them in this moment. Yeah, I think they have this they're both really imaginative, and they see potential. They see potential in the fucking shittest houses. Every time we moved to like a fucking dump, and I remember when we moved to Salisbury Lodge, seeing rats run around, and I was like, fuck this.
And when we moved, the one in Australia that we moved to after that, I remember walking through, and it's such a, I think back on it and I feel so bad, sorry mum and dad. I remember walking out of the house with my 13-year-old sass being like, what have you done?
They see potential.
I don't remember, like, you were in, it was like a bomb site for you doing your year 12. Like, yeah. It was literally the whole thing, the whole back of the house was demolished.
Yeah.
Just looked like it had been blown away.
Yeah.
And it was just like dirt. And then they were out there, like, your dad would be out there at 6 p.m. at night, in, you know, with a hammer doing something. And I'm like, what are you doing?
What are you Maybe up to? And the walls, they would let me have parties at the house, and you'd let these 17-year-olds write on all the walls because everything would get demolished. And so you would just have, like, profanities and like graffiti penises all over the house.
One of the first visits I did as your boyfriend, he let me throw a hammer through a wall.
Yes. I mean, yeah, like when you think about, like, you know, as two very different personalities, why we both been able to take such risks, like, it's because we were brought up with the ability to know that, like, stuff's possible.
Yeah. And I think, like, for those, like, that support doesn't necessarily come from your family or your parents, it's getting in community and around people, where, or being that person for other people. And when you see potential in others, like, calling it out of them. Like, I've got so many wonderful friends that are doing their own businesses, very different to what we do, but it's cheering them on and going, no, like pushing through. I don't know, we've just got to get around each other.
I love that. And I think that's what we're doing in the Inspire Collective. I think that's what I do with anyone I want to work with. It's like, hey, I see what you're fucking capable of, and I believe in it. I want to give what my parents gave to both of us, to all three of us. Mm. 4 of us. We always forget our older brother. Sorry, Benny. And like, what, like, I want to give that gift to others, because not everyone is so lucky. But like, I think when you have someone who just sees the light and sees the potential, and then you start being able to see it in yourself, that's when crazy amounts of creative success can happen, and entrepreneurial success.
Because there are people who we went to school with who had a lot more financial opportunity than you, like you, who had a lot more traditional privilege than you probably.
Mm.
And that, but your parents were so, there was just such a supportive environment. And I think, of course, there was financial privilege too, because, you know, we live in a nice part of the world, and,
yeah,
you know, you always had a roof over your head and always had food and everything. And as you say, your parents could occasionally come in and help you with the rent,
yeah,
when you were desperate. But much more than that, I think, was the emotional support.
Oh my God, 100%. Like, they could have chucked loads of money at me, but if they never gave me what they, which was like a weird belief in myself, that I could do what I wanted to. Like, I could literally ring my dad right now and I'd say, I really want to start a farm. And he'd be like, fucking cool.
Yeah.
How can we do it? You know? And like, that kind of his thing is what I think we need to give each other, you're right. Like, I love this idea of that's what we give each other. I think that's what the last, like, day has been for you, Kirsty. It's like, okay, well, like, I know you can do fucking anything. So, like, what are you going to do next with your business? And it's so fun.
Yes. I find it fun. It was so fun. I went through such a ride yesterday of, like, us having discussions on a walk of, like, all these things that are so exciting to me, but, like, it just was so overwhelming to then finally come home and write stuff down. And I have this massive piece of butcher's paper with just, like, pure solid gold on it. But, like, I was crippled for a hot second there where I couldn't move forward. I couldn't move backwards. I was, like, weighed down with just too much thinking, whereas I think you love being there.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying. Like, because once you've had 17 massive fucking good ideas, that can be very, like, oh no, like, what do I do next? But then this is why you're brilliant, because you need to learn to use your skills at distilling all these things into really small tasks. And then that, because all of these massive ideas actually just get done in tiny steps, like one by one. It's about, like, looking at them and then, like, being like, okay, well, like, how do I pull them down into a to-do list? Basically, you alchemize that big butcher's sheet into a to-do list, and you love to-do lists.
I wanted to ask something as well, a bit unrelated but related, which is, how has being a mom affected your business and your entrepreneurial spirit?
Big question. No, it's actually been really good for the business. I think before going on my first maternity leave, I was the center of all knowledge, and the business wasn't capable of running without me day to day at the helm. And so it forced me to hire people to do those jobs. So I literally basically hired 2 full-time women to do my job, and I still had a job, which makes me see that I was doing the job of three jobs. And so the business actually blossomed and bloomed more than it, with me on a mat leave, than it has, which, like, that's very unusual, but I think is a testament to the way that I set it up. I just have less time. And so I think, as Amy was just saying, I've got to be a lot more, I've got to prioritize a lot better, in that I might have an hour in the day whilst Frank's asleep, and I've got to use that hour very wisely.
And I think you lose control, and I think you love control. Because, like, it's hard, like, when we're talking about it, I'm like, God, this is so tricky, because you just don't know when you're going to get your hour, because, like, what if her sleep is shit, or what if she's been a little bee?
Yeah. But I also think, on the flip, everything matters a lot more, but also a lot less now. Like, the whole business has more weight to it, because I'm like, because I'm building something big. It's not just my 9-to-5 bringing cash in. I'm like, this is Frankie's schooling. It's holidays. It's her house that she's going to live in. Like, it's so much bigger, and I care more about what we're doing. But at the same time, the day-to-day feels less important, because it's just about her. And I'm like, a bad day isn't a bad day, because I'm like, at the end of the day, she's healthy. She's happy. And yes, that client was pissed, but I don't care. Whereas I used to really care.
Yeah, I like that. It's like, somehow managed to make it a bigger deal and less bigger deal.
How badly did you need to wee, Kirsty?
Oh, but I also think you need to wee. Both need to wee, and we're just doing little wee-wee dance.
Do you want
to
wrap
How did you know I needed to wee?
You're both jiggly on the chair over there, and Amy, you've almost got tears in your eyes.
Sometimes my wee comes out my eye holes. This has been a great discussion. We can end it here. We can both wee.
Is there anything in closing that you would like to say?
I want to thank you both. Cute. Even just yesterday, like, it wasn't an intentional, like, let's sit down and talk about your business day, but, like, so much gold from yesterday. And I think that is just who you both are as creatives and as people, in that you pull out so much, but by you pull it out so gently, by just asking questions and prodding in the right ways, and it feels so, like, supportive and like a big hug, but also challenging. I don't know, they don't really go together, but somehow you two do that. I don't know if one of you does one and one of you does the other.
I'm the good cop.
Yeah, James is the hug, and Amy's like, what are you doing? Fuck's sake.
We are just so proud of you. And we love so watching proud. You do what you do, especially as a mama. And yeah, I fucking love that we get to be entrepreneurs together, and to talk about this stuff is so much fun. And I'm so glad we're not alone in it, because it can be a journey.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a journey. Okay, you're going to let us wee, James?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Kirsty. If you're in the Sydney area and you need to move, made home.
We'll put a link in the description. Or if your parents or your grandparents need to move and they are worried about it, then Kirsty's business will literally do it all for them from the beginning to the end.
Amazing.
And Amy's going to wee now.
Thank you. I do. Who's going to go first?
But can I just say quickly at the end, free masterclass Saturday. And there are two time slots for both masterclasses. If you come and sign up on our website, the link will be in the description. If you can't attend live, you will get the replay.
So, and it's about delusion.
It's about delusion.
It's about being delusional and how it's good for you.
And how important it is to be delusional. Okay, everyone.
All right, bye.